Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 40, given in Bombay, India.
Osho, you said that either one sees the world or the Brahma, and no gradually increasing perception of the Brahma is possible. But in experience, we feel that as we become more and more silent and still, the feeling of the divine presence becomes gradually clearer and clearer. What is this gradual growth and clarity if the authentic experience is never gradual but is sudden? This has been a very ancient problem. Sudden enlightenment are gradual. Many things have to be understood. There has been a tradition which says enlightenment is gradual, like anything else. Everything can be divided into degrees. Everything can be divided into steps. Knowledge also can be divided. You can become more and more wise. You can become more and more enlightened. This has been widely accepted, because human mind cannot think anything suddenly. Mind wants to divide, analyze. Mind is a divider. Degrees can be understood by the mind. Suddenness is non-mental. It is beyond mind. If I say to you, you are ignorant, gradually you will become wise, this is conceivable. You can comprehend it. If I say to you, no, there is no gradual growth, either you are ignorant or you become enlightened, there is a sudden jump. Then the question will be, then how to be enlightened? If there is no gradualness, there can be no progress. If there is no degree of growth, no degrees, then you cannot make a progress. You cannot proceed. From where to begin? Because in a sudden explosion, the beginning and the end are both the same. There is no gap between the beginning and the end. So from where to begin? The beginning is the end. It becomes a puzzle for the mind. It becomes a koan. The sudden enlightenment seems to be impossible. Not that it is impossible, but because mind cannot conceive it. And remember, how the mind can conceive enlightenment? It cannot. Widely it has been accepted that this inner explosion is also a gradual growth. Even many enlightened persons have conceded to our minds. And they have said, yes, there is a gradual growth. Not that there is. They have said and accepted our attitude, our way of perception. They have been in a deep compassion for us. And the no, you start thinking that it's gradual. The start is good. There will be no gradual growth. But if you start, if you go on seeking it, someday the sudden thing will happen to you. And if it is said that it is only sudden and no gradual growth is possible, you are not going even start, then it will never happen. Many enlightened persons have said that it is a gradual thing, just to help you, just to pursue you to start. But something is possible through gradual growth, not enlightenment, something else. And that something else becomes helpful. For example, if you make water to evaporate, heating it, evaporation will come suddenly at a certain degree, 100 degree, evaporation will happen suddenly. There will be no gradual growth with water and vapor. You cannot divide, you cannot say this water is a little vapor and a little water. Either it is water, it is, or it is vapor. Suddenly, the water jumps into the state of vapor. There is a jump, no gradual growth. But by heating, gradually you are giving heat to the water. You are helping it to reach to the 100 degree point, to the evaporating point. This is a gradual growth. Up to the evaporating point, the water will grow in the sense of being more and more hot. Evaporation will happen suddenly. So there have been masters, wise, compassionate, using the language of human mind, which you can understand, and telling to you that yes, there is a gradual growth. It gives you courage and confidence and hope and a possibility that it can happen to you also. You cannot attain it in a sudden explosion, but by and by, step and step, with your limitations, with your weaknesses, you can grow to it. It may take many lives, but still there is hope. You will just get heated by all your efforts. Second thing to remember, even a hot water is still water. So even if you become more clear in your mind, more pure in your perceptions, more moral, more centered, you are still man, not a Buddha, not enlightened. You become more silent, more still, calmer. You feel a deep bliss. But still, you are man. And all your feelings are really negative and positive. You feel calm because you are now less tense. You feel blissful because now you are less clinging to your miseries, not creating them. You feel collected, not that you have come to realize the One, but only because now you are less divided. Remember this. Your growth is negative. You are just hot water. The possibility is there that any moment you will come to the point where evaporation happens. When it happens, you will not feel calmness. You will not feel blissful even. You will not feel silent, because these attributes are related to their opposites. When you are tense, you can feel silence. When you feel noise, you feel stillness. When you are divided, fragmentary, you can feel oneness. When you are in suffering, anguish, you can feel bliss. That's why Buddha is silent about what has happened to him after enlightenment. He is silent because language cannot express now that which is beyond polarities. He cannot say, I am now filled with bliss. Because even this feeling that now I am in bliss is possible only with a background of suffering and anguish. You can feel health only with the background of illness and disease. You can feel life only with the background of death. Buddha cannot say, now I am deathless, because the death has disappeared so completely that deathlessness cannot be felt. And the misery has disappeared so completely, how can you feel blissful? And the noise and the anguish are so absolutely non-existential, how can you feel silence? All these experiences, feelings, are related to their opposites. Without the opposites, they cannot be felt. If darkness disappears completely, how can you feel light? It is impossible. So Buddha cannot say, I have become light. He cannot say, now I am filled with light. If he says such things, he will simply say he is yet not a Buddha. He cannot utter such things. Darkness must be there if you want to feel light. Death must be there if you want to feel deathlessness. You cannot avoid the opposite. It is a basic necessity for any experience to exist. So what is Buddha's experience? Whatsoever we know, it is not that. Neither negative nor positive. Neither this nor that. And whatsoever can be expressed, it is not that. That's why Lao Tse insists so much. The truth cannot be said. And the moment you say it, you have falsified it. Already it is untrue. Truth cannot be said because of this. It cannot be divided into polar opposites. And language is meaningful only with polar opposites. Language becomes meaningless. Without the contrary, language loses meaning. So there is a tradition which says enlightenment is gradual. But that tradition is not really the truth. It is just half-truth uttered in compassion for human minds. Enlightenment is sudden, and it cannot be otherwise. It is a jump. It is a discontinuity from your past. Try to understand. If something is gradual, the past goes on remaining in it. If something is gradual, then there is a continuity. There is no gap. If from ignorance to knowledge there is gradual growth, the ignorance cannot completely disappear. It will remain. It will continue. Because there has been no discontinuity. There has been no gap. So the ignorance may become more polished. The ignorance may become more knowledgeable. The ignorance may appear wise, but it is there. More polished, of course, then more dangerous. More knowledgeable, then more cunning, and more capable in deceiving oneself. Enlightenment and ignorance are absolutely separate, discontinuous. A jump is needed, a jump in which the past dissolves completely. The old is gone, it is no more, and the new has appeared which was never before. Buddha is reported to have said that I am not that who was seeking. The one who has appeared now was never before. This looks absurd, illogical. But it is so. It is so. Buddha says, I am not that who was seeking. I am not that who was desiring for enlightenment. I am not that who was ignorant. The old man is dead completely. I am a new one. I never existed in that old man. There has been a gap. The old has died and the new is born. For mind to conceive it is difficult. How can you conceive? How can you conceive a gap? Something must continue. How can something disappear completely and something new can appear? It was absurd for logical minds. It was absurd for scientific minds just 2 decades before. But now for science it is not absurd. Now they say that deep down in the atom, electrons appear and disappear. And they take jumps. From one point, the electron takes a jump to another. In between the two, it is not. It appears at point A, then disappears and appears at point B. And between the gap, it is no more. It is not there. It becomes absolutely non-existential. If this is so, it means non-existence is also a sort of existence. It is difficult to conceive. It is so. Non-existence is also a sort of existence. As if something moves from the visible to the invisible. As if something moves from form to formlessness. When Gautama Siddhartha, the old man who died in Gautam Buddha, when Gautama Siddhartha was seeking, he was a visible form. When the enlightenment happened, that form completely dissolved into the formless. For a moment there is a gap. There was no one. Then from that formlessness, a new form arises. This is Gautam Buddha. Because the body continues the same, we think there is a continuity. But the inner reality changes completely. Because the body continues the same, that's why we say Gautam Buddha. Gautam Siddhartha has now become Gautam the Awakened. He has become a Buddha. But Buddha himself says, I am not that who was seeking. I am a totally different one. Because it is difficult for the mind to conceive, and for the mind many things are difficult. But just because they are difficult for the mind, they cannot be denied. The mind has to yield to those impossibles which are incomprehensible to it. Facts cannot yield to the mind has to yield to the facts. This is one of the most basic inner facts, that enlightenment is a discontinuous phenomenon. The old simply disappears, and the new is born. There has been another tradition, a lesser tradition, of those who have been insisting all through history that enlightenment is sudden, it is not gradual. But they are very few. They stick to the truth, but they are bound to be very few, because no following can be created for a sudden enlightenment. You simply cannot understand it, so how can you follow it? It is shocking to the logical structure, and it seems absurd, impossible. But remember one thing, when you move into deeper realms, whether of matter or of mind, you will have to encounter many things which a superficial mind cannot conceive. Tertullian has said, one of the greatest Christian mystics, that I believe in God because God is the greatest absurdity. I believe in God because mind cannot believe in God. Impossible to believe in God. No proof, no argument, no logic can help the belief in God. Everything goes against him, against his existence. And Tertullian said, that's why I believe. Because only believing in an absurdity, I can move from my mind away. And this is beautiful. If you want to move away from your mind, you will need something which your mind cannot conceive. If your mind can conceive it, it will absorb it into its own system. And then you cannot transcend your mind. That's why every religion has insisted on some point which is absurd. No religion can exist without some absurdity, just as a foundation in it. On that absurdity, either you turn back and you say, I cannot believe, I go away, then you remain yourself. Or you take a jump. You turn away from your mind and follow the absurdity. That absurdity will kill your mind. And unless your mind is killed, that enlightenment cannot happen. Your mind is the problem. Your logic is the problem. Your arguments is the problem. They are on the surface. They look true. They deceive, and they are not truth. For example, look how mind's structure functions. The mind divides everything in two, and nothing is divisible. Existence is indivisible. You cannot divide. But mind goes on dividing. It says this is life and this is death. What is actual fact? Actual fact is that both are same. You are alive and dying in this very moment. Doing both. Rather, you both, death and life. Mind divides, says this is death and this is life. Not only divides, it says both are opposites, enemies. And death is trying to destroy life. and it looks okay. Death is trying to destroy life. But if you penetrate deeper than the mind, death is not trying to destroy life. You cannot exist without death. Death is helping you to exist. It is every moment helping you to exist. If for a single moment death stops working in you, you will die. Death is every moment throwing away many parts in you which have become non-functional. Many cells are dying. They are removed by death. When they are removed, new are born. You are growing. Something is dying and something is being born continuously. Every moment there is death and life, and they are functioning both. In language, I have to call them both, two. They are not two. They are two aspects of one phenomenon. Life and death are one. Life, death is a process. But mind divides. That division looks okay for us. But that division is false. You say, this is light and that is dark. You divide. But where darkness starts and where light ends, can you demark? You cannot demark. Actually, whiteness and blackness are two poles of a long grayness. And that grayness is life. On one pole, blackness appears. On another pole, whiteness appears. But the reality is gray. And that gray has both in itself. Mind divides and then everything looks clear-cut. Life is very confusing. That's why life is a mystery. And because of this, mind cannot understand life. It is helpful to create clear-cut concepts. You can think easily, conveniently, but you miss the very reality of life. Life is a mystery, and mind demystifies everything. Then you have dead fragments, not the whole. With the mind, you will not be able to conceive how enlightenment is sudden, how you will disappear and something new will be there you had never known before. But don't try to understand it through mind. Rather, practice something which will make you more and more heart. Rather, try to attain some fire which will make you more and more hot. And then one day suddenly you will know the old has disappeared, the water is no more. This is a new phenomenon. You have evaporated. And everything has changed totally. Water was flowing always downwards. And after evaporation, the new phenomena is rising upwards. The whole law has changed. You have heard about one law, Newton's gravitation, that the earth attracts everything downwards. But gravitation is only one law. There is another law. You have may not have heard about it, because science has yet to uncover it. But yoga and tantra have known it for centuries. They call it levitation. Gravitation is the pull downwards, and levitation is the pull upwards. And they say that, we know the story, is well known, Newton was sitting in a under a tree, under an apple tree, and then one apple fell down. Because of this, he started thinking, and he felt that something is pulling the apple downwards. Tantra and yoga ask, in the first place, how the apple reached upwards. How? That must be explained first, how the apple reached upwards, how the tree is going upwards. The apple was not there. It was hidden in a seed. And the apple traveled the whole journey. It reached up, and only then it fell down. So gravitation is a secondary law. Levitation was there first. Something was pulling it upwards. What is that? In life, we know gravitation easily because we are all pulled downwards. The water flows downwards. It is under the law of gravitation. When it evaporates, suddenly the law also evaporates. Now it is under levitation. It rises upwards. Ignorance is under gravitation. You always move downwards. And whatsoever you do makes no difference. You have to move downwards. In every way you will have to move downwards. And just a struggle will not be of much help unless you enter a different law, the law of levitation. That's what samadhi is, the door for levitation. Once you evaporate, once you are no more water, everything changes. Not that now you can control, there is no need to. Simply, you cannot flow downwards now. As it was impossible before to rise upwards, now it is impossible to flow downwards. It is not that a Buddha tries to be non-violent, he cannot do anything. It is not that he tries to be loving, he cannot do anything. He is to be loving. That is not a choice, not an effort, not any cultivated virtue. Simply now, this is the law, he rises upwards. Hate is under gravitation, love is under levitation. This sudden transformation doesn't mean you are not to do anything and simply wait for the sudden transformation. Then it will never come. This is the puzzle. Because when I say, or someone says, enlightenment is sudden, we think if it is sudden, then nothing can be done. Then simply wait. When it will happen, it will happen. What can you do? If it is gradual, you can do something. But I say to you, it is not gradual, and yet you can do something and you have to do something. And that something will not bring enlightenment. That something will bring you near the phenomena of enlightenment. That something will make you open for the enlightenment to happen. So enlightenment cannot be an outcome of your efforts. It is not. Through your efforts, simply you become available for the higher law of levitation. Your availability will come through your efforts, not enlightenment. You will become open. You will become non-resistant. You will become cooperative for the higher law to work. And once you are cooperative, non-resistant, the higher law starts functioning. Your efforts will yield you. Your efforts will make you more receptive. It is just like this. You are sitting in your room with closed doors. The sun is outside. You are in darkness. You cannot do anything to bring the sun in. You cannot do anything to bring the sun in. But simply by opening your doors, your room becomes available. You cannot bring the sun in, but you can stop it out. If you open your doors, the sun will enter, the rays will come, the light will come in the room. You are not bringing the light really, you are simply removing the hindrance. The light comes by itself. Understand it deeply. You cannot do anything to reach enlightenment, but you are doing many things to hinder it, reaching to you. You are creating many barriers. You can do something negatively only. You can throw the barriers. You can open the doors. The moment doors are open, the rays will enter. It will touch you and transform you. All effort in this sense is to destroy the barriers, not to attain enlightenment. All effort is negative. It is just like medicine. The medicine cannot give you health. It can only destroy our diseases. Once the diseases are not there, health happens. You become available. Diseases are there, the health cannot happen. That's why no medical science, Eastern or Western, has yet been able to define what health is. They can define each disease exactly. They know thousands and thousands of diseases, and they have defined them all. But they cannot define what health is. At the most, they can say, when there is no disease, you are healthy. But what is health? Something which goes beyond mind. Something which is there. You can have it. You can feel it. But you cannot define it. You have known health. Can you define it, what it is? And the moment you try to define, you will have to bring disease in. You will have to talk something about disease, and you will have to say, no disease is health. This is ridiculous. To define health, you need disease. And disease has definite qualities. Health also has its own qualities, but they are not so definite because they are infinite. You can feel them. When health is there, you know it is there. But what it is? Diseases can be treated, destroyed. Barriers are broken. The light enters. Similar is the phenomena of enlightenment. It is a spiritual health. Mind is a spiritual disease. And meditation is nothing but medicine. Buddha is said to have said that I am a medicine man, a vaidya, a physician. I am not a teacher. And I have not come to give you doctrines. I know a certain medicine which can cure your diseases. And don't ask about the health. Take the medicine, destroy the disease, and you will know what health is. Don't ask about it. Buddha says, I am not a metaphysician, I am not a philosopher. I am not interested what God is, what soul is, what kaivalya, moksha, nirvana is. I am not interested. I am simply interested in what disease is and how it can be cured. I am a medicine man. His approach is absolutely scientific. He has diagnosed human dilemma and disease absolutely. His approach is right. Destroy the barriers. What are the barriers? Thinking is the basic barrier. When you think, a barrier is created of thoughts. Between you and the reality, a wall is created of thoughts. And thoughts are more dense than any stone wall can be. And then there are many layers of thought. You cannot penetrate through them and see what real is. You go on thinking what real is, and you go on imagining what real is, and real is here and now, waiting for you. If you become available to it, it will happen to you. You go on thinking about what real is, but how can you think if you don't know? You cannot think something which you don't know. You can think only about something you already know. Thinking is repetitious, tautological. It never reaches to anything new and unknown. Through thinking, you never touch the unknown, you only touch the known. And it is meaningless because you already know. So you can go on chewing it again and again. You may enjoy the chewing, but nothing new comes out of it. Stop thinking. Dissolve thinking, and the barrier is broken, and your doors are open, and the light can enter. And once the light enters, you know the old is no more. And you know now that which you are is absolutely the new. It was never. You had never known it. But you may even say that this is the ancient most. It was always there, not known to you. You can use both expressions. They mean the same. You can call it the ancient most, the Brahma, who has always been there, and you were missing it continuously. Or you can say, this is the most new, that which has happened only now, and it was never before. That too is right, because for you, this is the new. And if you want to say the truth, then you will have your paradoxical expression. Upanishads say, this is the new and this is the old. This is the most ancient and this is the most new. The far and the near. This is both. But then, language becomes paradoxical. Contradictory. And you ask me, what is this gradual growth and clarity if the authentic experience is never gradual but is sudden? This clarity is of the mind. This clarity is of a lessening disease. This clarity is of falling barriers. One barrier falls, you are less burdened. your eyes are less clouded. Another barrier falls, you are still more unburdened. Your eyes become still more clear. But this clarity is not of enlightenment. This clarity is only of a lessening disease, not of health. When all barriers disappear, with all those barriers, your mind also disappears. Then you cannot say, now my mind is clear, no more. You can simply say, now there is no mind. When there is no mind, then the clarity is of enlightenment. Then the clarity is of enlightenment. That is absolutely different. Another dimension has opened. But you will have to pass through clarities of mind. Only remember always that howsoever clear your mind becomes, it is still a barrier. Howsoever transparent your mind becomes, that you can look to the other side, it becomes a transparent glass, still it is a barrier. And you will have to break it completely. So sometimes it happens, meditating, one becomes more and more clear, more serene, more still, silence is felt. Then one clings to meditation and thinks everything is achieved. Great masters have always been emphasizing that a day comes when you have to throw your meditation also. I will tell you one story, one Zen story. Bokoju was meditating very deeply, meditating with his whole heart. His master will come every day and will just laugh and go back. Bokuju became annoyed. The master will not say anything, he will just come, look at him, laugh and go away. And Bokuju was feeling that his meditation was deepening and he needed someone should appreciate. And he was waiting for the master that he should pat. He should say, good Bokuju, you are doing well. And he will just laugh. That laughter was felt insulting, as if Bokuju is not progressing, and he was progressing. As he was progressing more, the laughter grew more and more insulting. And it was impossible to tolerate it now. One day, the master came, and Bokuju was feeling absolutely silent as far as mind can go. And there was no noise within, no thought. Mind was absolutely transparent. No barrier was felt. He was filled with a subtle deep happiness. Joy was bubbling all over. He was in ecstasy. And he thought, now my master will not laugh. Now the moment has come, and he is going to tell me, now Bokuju, you have become enlightened. That day his master came with a stone brick in his hand, and he started rubbing that brick on the rock Bokuju was sitting. He was so silent that rubbing of the brick created noise. He became annoyed. And at last he couldn't tolerate. So he opened his eyes and asked his master, what are you doing? The master said, I am trying to make this brick a mirror. And by rubbing, I hope someday this brick will become a mirror. So Bokuju said, you are behaving stupidly. This rock, this stone, brick is never going to become a mirror. Howsoever you rub it, it is not going to become a mirror. So the master laughed and said, and what you are doing? This mind can never become enlightenment. And you are going, rubbing and rubbing. You are polishing it. And you are feeling so good that when I laugh, you feel annoyed. And suddenly, as the master threw his brick, Bokuju became aware. When the master threw his brick, suddenly he felt that the master was right. And the mind broke. And from that day on, there was no mind and no meditation. He became enlightened. The master said to him, now you can move anywhere. Go and teach others also. First teach them meditation and then teach them non-meditation. First teach them how to make the mind clear. Because only a very clear mind can understand that now even this clear mind is a barrier. Only a deeply meditative mind can understand that now even meditation has to be thrown. You cannot understand it right now. Krishnamurti goes on saying that there is no need of any meditation, and he is right. But talking to wrong persons. He's right, there is no need of any meditation. But he is wrong. Because to whom he is saying this? Those who cannot even understand what meditation is. How can they understand that there is no need of meditation? This is going to be harmful for them. Because they will cling to this idea. This idea is very good. No need of meditation, so already you are enlightened. Listening to Krishnamurti, many feel now there is no need. And those who are meditating are foolish. They may waste their whole life because of this thought. And this thought is right. There comes a point where meditation has to be thrown. There comes a point where meditation becomes a barrier. But wait for that point to come. You cannot throw something which you don't have. If Krishnamurti says, no need of meditation, don't meditate, you have never meditated. So how can you don't meditate? A rich man can renounce his riches, not a poor man. To renounce, you need something to renounce in the first place. If you meditate, you can renounce one day. And that is the last renunciation and the greatest. Wealth can be renounced, it is easy. Family can be renounced, it is not difficult. The whole world can be renounced because everything is outer and outer and outer. The last thing is meditation, the innermost wealth. And when you renounce this, you have renounced yourself. Now no self remains, not even the meditating self, the great meditator. Even that image is broken. You have fallen into nothingness. Only in this nothingness, the discontinuity, the old has disappeared, and the new has happened. You become available through meditation. Through meditation, whatsoever is felt, don't think it is the enlightenment. Those are just the glimpses of a lessening disease, of a dispersing disease. You feel good. The disease is less, you feel healthy relatively. Real health is not yet there. But you are more healthy than before. And it is good to be more healthy than before. Second question. You said that life exists in polar opposites, like love and hate, attraction and repulsion, virtue and vice. But what happens to those polar opposites when one is in the witnessing consciousness? Don't ask. Wait for the happening. What happens? Because you can ask and some answer can be given. But that some answer cannot become an authentic answer for you. And never jump ahead. Don't ask what happens when one dies. What happens? And whatsoever is said will be meaningless because you are still alive. What happens when someone is dead? You will have to pass through it. Unless you are dead, you cannot know it. And whatsoever is said can be believed on trust, but it is meaningless. Rather, ask how to be dead so that you can know what happens. No one else can die for you. So no one else's experience can be an experience for you. You will have to die. Death cannot be another's experience. It has to be yours own. The similar is the case. What happens when polarities disappear? In a way, nothing happens. Happening dissolves, because all happening is polar. When love and hate both dissolve, and there is, what happens? When you love, you hate also. And you hate the same person you love. Hate is just hidden. And when hate comes up, love goes down. Jesus says, love your enemies, and I say, you cannot do otherwise. You love your enemies. You hate so much, without love, that is impossible. Love is just the other aspect of the coin. And where is the demarcation, where love ends and hate begins? Just a gray extension. When you hate someone and when you love, can you demark? You hate the same person. And any moment, hate can become love and love can become hate. This is the polarity of mind. This is how mind functions. Don't get worried about it. If you know, you will never get worried. If you love someone, you know hate will be there. If someone loves you, you expect both. Love and hate. But what happens in a Buddha-like consciousness? When love and hate both disappear, what happens? difficult to express whatever. But whatsoever has been felt around Buddha is more like love without it. It has been felt around Buddha, not that Buddha feels it so. Buddha cannot feel now because he cannot feel hate. He cannot feel love. But around him, everyone has felt a deep love flowing. We can describe it love without hate. But then the quality is different. Because with our love, hate is inevitably present. It colors, it changes the quality of it. Hate gives a passion to love, a force, intensity, focusedness, concentration. Buddha's love becomes a dispersed phenomenon. Intensity is not there. It cannot burn you. It can only warm you. It is not a fire, it is just a glow. It is not a flame. It is just like morning light when the sun has not arisen and the night has disappeared. Just the moment of interval. Light without any fire, without any flame. But we have felt it as love. And the purest, because there is no hate. But even to feel this type of love, you have to be a very deep meditative mind. You need a mind which can meditate. Otherwise, such a delicate and diffused phenomena will not be felt. You have to be very deeply sensitive. You can only feel grass love, and that grassness is given by hate. If someone loves you simply without any hate, it will be difficult for you to feel his love. You will have to grow to become more transparent, delicate, sensitive, like a very sensitive instrument, musical instrument you will have to become. Only then sometimes the breeze will come to you, and the breeze is so non-violent now, it will not hit you. It will be just a delicate touch. If you are very, very aware, you will feel it, otherwise you will miss it. But this is our feeling around a Buddha, not Buddha's feeling. Buddha cannot feel that whether this is love or hate. Really, the polar opposites disappear and simple presence remains. Buddha is a presence, not a mood. You are moods, not a presence. Sometimes you are hate, a mood. Sometimes you are love, another mood. Sometimes you are anger, another mood. Sometimes a greed, another mood. You are moods. You are never a pure presence. And your consciousness goes on being modified by your moods. Each mood becomes the master, modifies the consciousness, cripples it, changes it, colors it, deforms it. A Buddha is without moods. Now the hate has gone, the love has gone, anger has gone, the greed has gone. Non-greed also, non-anger also, they have disappeared, the moods have disappeared. He is a simple presence. If you are sensitive, you will feel love flowing from him. You will feel compassion. If you are not sensitive, if you are grass and your meditation has not developed, you will not feel him at all. Buddha will move from you, amidst you, you will not even become aware that some phenomena is passing. Something rare, something which passes only in centuries once, you will not become aware. Or if you are very gross, anti-meditative, you will even become angry by his presence. Because his presence is subtle, you may even become violent because of his presence. His presence may be disturbing to you. If you are very gross, anti-meditative, you will become an enemy of the Buddha, and he has not done anything. If you are open, sensitive, you will become a lover, and he has not done anything. Remember this. When you become an enemy, it is you. When you become a friend, it is you. A Buddha is a simple presence. He is available. If you become an enemy, you turn your back. You simply miss something which you may have to wait for lives again. Ananda is weeping the day Buddha was passing away. And Buddha said in the morning, now this is my last day. Now the body is going to be finished. Ananda was near. He was the first whom Buddha said that this is his last day. Go and tell everyone. If they have to ask something, they can ask. Ananda started weeping and crying. So Buddha said, why are you weeping? From this body? And I have been teaching and teaching and teaching that this body is false. It is already dead. Or are you weeping for my death? Don't weep, because I died 40 years before. I died the day I became enlightened. So only now this body is dispersing. Don't weep. Ananda said a beautiful thing. He said, I am not weeping for your body or for you. I am weeping for myself. I am yet unenlightened. And now how many lives will pass when again a Buddha will be available? And I may not be able again to recognize you. Because unless you become enlightened, your clarity of mind can be clouded any moment. Before you become enlightened, you fall back again and again. Nothing is certain. So Ananda says, I am weeping for myself. I am yet unenlightened. I have not yet reached the goal. And you are entering nothingness. Many, even Buddha's own father, couldn't recognize that his son is no more his son. That something has happened into this body, which rarely happens. The darkness has disappeared. And the eternal light is burning there. He couldn't recognize. Many were against him. Many tried to kill him. But it is all up to you. Whether you become a friend, a lover, an enemy, it depends on you, on your sensitivity, on your mind, how your mind feels it. But a Buddha is not doing anything. He simply is a presence. Just by his presence, much happens around him. Those who can feel love, they will feel he is in deep love with them. And the deeper you can feel, you will grow in feeling that his love is deepening towards you. If you can become a real lover, you will feel Buddha is a lover to you. If you can become an enemy and can feel hate, he will feel Buddha as an enemy, and he will feel he has to be killed, destroyed. It depends on a Buddha is a non-doer. He is a simple being. He is there. So what happens, difficult to say, because whatsoever we say will be a mood. If we say he becomes a lover, a great love, it will be false. It is our feeling. Jesus' follower felt that he is simply love, and Jesus' enemy thought he is to be crucified. It depends on you. It depends on you how you take it, how you are capable to take it, how much open you are. But from the side of the enlightened one, nothing can be said. He can simply say, now he is. Without doing anything, he is. Just a presence, a being. Third question, you said that when a person is totally in the present moment, without any thought in the mind, then he is a Buddha mind. But even when there is no thought in me, and I am in the moment absorbed, with no past or future, I do not feel the Buddha nature. Please explain when thus, in this thoughtless awareness, the Buddha mind is revealed. First thing, if you are aware that there is no thought in your mind, there is thought. Even this is a thought, that now there is no thought in me. This thought is the last thought. Allow it also to disappear. And then why are you waiting? That now when Buddha nature is going to happen to me, that again is a thought. It will not happen in that way, never. I will tell you one story. One king came to Gautam Buddha. He was a devotee, a great devotee. And for the first time he has come for his darshan, for his guidance. In one of his hands, in his left hand, he has one beautiful golden ornament, priceless, with many jewels in it. The most precious thing that he had, one rare piece of art, he had come to present to him just for his devotion. He came near. In his left hand was that priceless jewel ornament. He was going to present it. Buddha said, drop it. He was disturbed. He never expected. He was shocked. But when Buddha is saying, drop it, so he dropped. In his other hand, in his right hand, he has brought a beautiful rose flower. He thought Buddha may not like stones. He may just think, what childish thing you have brought. So it is good to have an alternative. So he has brought a beautiful rose flower. A rose flower is not so grass, not so material. It has a spirituality. Something of the unknown is there. And Buddha may like it because he says life is a flux. And the flower is in the morning and in the evening it is no more. It is the most flux-like thing in the world. So he puts his second hand in front of Buddha and wants to present the flower, Buddha again says, drop it. Now he feels very disturbed. Now he has nothing to present. But when Buddha says, he drops it. Then suddenly he becomes aware of the meaning. That why are you presenting things to me when you can present yourself? When he becomes aware with both his hands empty, he presents himself. But Buddha says, drop it. Again, now he has nothing to drop. Just empty hands, and Buddha says, drop it. Mahakashyap, Sariputta, Anand, his other disciples were there. They started laughing. The man became aware that even to say that I present myself to you is egoistic. And even to say that now I am here and I have surrendered to you is not a surrender. So he himself falls down. Buddha smiles and he said, you understood well. Unless you drop even this idea of surrendering, unless you drop even this idea of empty hands, one has to drop even emptiness in the end. It is easy to understand to drop things. Then the hands were empty. And Buddha says, drop it. Even don't cling to this emptiness. When you do meditation, you have to drop thoughts. When thoughts are dropped, thought remains. And the thought is, now I have become thoughtless. A subtle feeling, a thought, now I have achieved. Now there is no thought. Now mind is vacant. Now I am empty, but this emptiness is filled with this thought. And whether thoughts are there or thought is there makes no difference. Drop it also. And why are you waiting for Buddha nature? You cannot wait. Because you will not be there. You will never meet Buddha. When Buddha happens, you will not be there. So your hopes are futile. You are wasting time. You will not be there. Kabir has said, when I was, you were not. And now you are. And where has gone Kabir? When I was seeking and seeking and desiring and hungering for you, you were not. I was there. Now you are there. Please tell me, where has gone Kabir? Where is that seeker who was seeking and seeking and hungering and weeping and crying for you? Where has that Kabir gone? You will not be there when Buddha happens. So don't wait. Don't desire. Because your desire, when Buddha will happen to me, and when I will become Buddha nature, when I will be enlightened, this very desire will create a barrier. The last barrier. To achieve total freedom, the desire to freedom is the last barrier. To be enlightened, even this desire for enlightenment has to be thrown, has to be cast away. One of the great Zen masters, Linchi, used to say, if you meet Buddha anywhere, kill him immediately. If you meet Buddha anywhere in your meditation, kill him immediately. He means this. This desire to be a Buddha, to be enlightened. If you meet it anywhere, kill it immediately. Only then that happens. Total desirelessness is needed. And when I say total desirelessness, even the desire for total desirelessness is included. You are without any desire. You are without any thought. And not even aware that there is no thought, there is no desire. And it happens. The last question. What are the possible reasons for not having an explosion catharsis? I constantly, even with 2 days Saktipat meditation, have a very mild catharsis. Does it necessarily mean that I am not open, are not open enough? Are there other possibilities? My concern over this then becomes a distraction to me during the meditation and after. The first thing to be noted, to be remembered, catharsis will happen deeply if you just help it to happen. If you just cooperate with it to happen. Mind is so suppressed and you have so much repressed things down that to reach them your cooperation is needed. So whenever you feel even a mild catharsis, help it to become stronger. Don't just wait. If you feel your hand is trembling, just don't wait. Help it to tremble more. Don't think that it is going to be spontaneous, so you have to wait. It will become spontaneous, then you will have to wait for years. Because for years you have been repressing. And repression was not spontaneous. You have done it on purpose. You will have to do quite the opposite now. Only then it can be brought to the surface. You feel like weeping. Mildly you weep. Help it. Make it a deep scream. You don't know that from the very beginning you have been suppressing your crying. You have not cried really. From the very beginning, the child wants to cry, to laugh. The crying is a deep necessity in him. Through crying, every day he goes through catharsis. The child has many frustrations, bound to be, of necessity. The child wants something he cannot say. He cannot express. The child wants something, but the parents may not be in a position to fulfill. The mother may not be available there. The mother may be engaged in some other work, and he may not be cared. At that moment, no attention is paid to him. He starts crying. The mother wants to persuade him, to seduce him, to console him, because she is disturbed, the father is disturbed, the whole family is disturbed. No one wants him to cry. Crying is a disturbance. Everyone tries him to distract so that he may not cry. We can bribe him, we can give him a toy, the mother can give him milk, anything, distraction, consolation, something, but he should cry. And crying is a deep necessity. If he can cry and is allowed to cry, he will become fresh again. The frustration is thrown through crying. Otherwise, with a stopped crying, the frustration is stopped. Now he will go on piling up. And you are a piled up cry. They call it, you need a primal scream. Now, a therapy is developing in the West just to help you to scream so totally that every cell of your body is involved in it. And if you can scream so madly that your whole body screams in it, you will be relieved of much pain, much suffering that is accumulated. And you will become just like a child, fresh and innocent again. But that primal scream is not going to come suddenly. You will have to help it. It is so deep down, and there are so many layers of repression that just don't wait, help it. When you want to cry, cry wholeheartedly. Give total energy to it and enjoy it. Second thing, help it, and second thing, enjoy it. Because if you are not enjoying what you are doing, it cannot go deep. It will be superficial. If you are screaming, then enjoy it. Enjoy the very thing. Feel good. If you are feeling somewhere that this is not good, what I am doing, what others will say, or what childish thing I am doing, even a slight feeling will become repression. Enjoy it and be playful with it. Enjoy and be playful. Just inquire more and more whether it can become deeper. Can you help it more? In what ways can you help it more? If you are sitting and crying, maybe that if you start jumping, the cry will become deeper. Or you lie down on the floor, start thrashing, will it become deeper? Try and help and enjoy. And you will feel there are many ways in which you can help, enjoy, to deepen it. And once it takes over, then you will not be needed. Once it comes to the right source, where energy is hidden, once you touch the right source and the energy is broken, then you are not needed. It will flow automatically, spontaneously. And when it starts flowing spontaneously, you will be cleansed completely. Just like after rains, flowers are cleansed. They become new. Every dust, whatsoever has gathered upon them, is no more there. They are themselves. In life we gather dust. This catharsis is just a cleansing. Help it, enjoy it, one day it will come. Just go on doing it. It cannot be predicted when it will come. The primal scream, when it will come, it cannot be said. Because man is very complex. It can come this very moment. It may take years. One thing is certain, if you help it, enjoy it, play with it, it is going to come. Enough for today.